Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, December 15th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Friday edition of the show. Two segments, you know them, you love them. Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 15 with myself and Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Once again, forcing him to join me after back-to-back 4-1 weeks here with him on the show. Second half of today's show, Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. We'll talk about sharp money in the college football bowl season for the games between now and when we're on the air again with Brent next Friday. Then also take a look at the sharp action for week 15 of the NFL season. Before we get to that, over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff going on right now. As I've been talking about throughout the week here, all 39 bowl games have been previewed. You can check those out. You can check out the matchup data for those games as well. Lots of angles in those, lots of statistics, lots of important information so that you can make the most informed decision possible on all of those college football bowl games. Also, make sure you check out the contests over at bangthebook.com. You can see which of those bowl games fit for your daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those contests that, again, are free to sign up for. Just sign up with an email address. We'll send you a newsletter every day detailing what's going on over at bangthebook.com, some of our new content, all that type of thing. But then you'll be entered into those contests with a chance to win cash. Also, we've got our daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels. We've got NBA total picks and NHL total picks, more often than not, from Alan Moody. It's pretty much a daily thing that he's got going on over there. Situational betting articles for the NBA, NHL, and college basketball. Just so much stuff going on over there, so much great stuff that can help you bang the books. And keep in mind, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. As you're looking around here throughout the month of December, lots of bowl games, lots of college basketball, all that type of stuff. You want to make sure that you're able to shop around for the best prices that are out there in the market. As you know, DSI Sportsbook offering that BTB25 promo code, $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. But you can also check out the sportsbook reviews that we have over at bangthebook.com. I'll tell you about books like Bookmaker, Bet Online, Five Dimes, Vietbet, Bet Any Sports. The list goes on and on, honestly, of the different books that are out there, the ratings grades that we give them, and then also exclusive deposit bonus codes for our bangthebook.com readers and our Bang the Book Radio listeners. So you can check that out over there in our sportsbook section. Very easy to find, bangthebook.com/sportsbooks, or just look for that sportsbooks link at the top of the page. One final thing I want to point out here before we get into this first segment with Joe Everett. You can find Bang the Book Radio every day over at bangthebook.com. Full shows, also the edited segments where we cut things down a little bit, amplify the audio, that type of thing. You can find those at bangthebook.com. You can find the individual segments also on our Spreaker page. And actually, as I was looking around, you can find those on our iTunes channel as well. We have two separate iTunes channels, one for the segments, one for the full shows. So subscribe to whichever one you want and make sure that you never miss an edition of Bang the Book Radio. Two guests joining me here to wrap up what has been a great week on Bang the Book Radio. The first, Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible, as he joins me for the Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. I would say I've got 3.5 plays here out of the 5 play card. Mini contest starting up here this week, so we'll get some of those quitters back into the contest here. But had 3 solid plays, one that's more of a play than a lean, but I did talk about it in the lean section. And then obviously, if I decide to go with that game, I'll have to determine one more. But 36 and 34 now in the super contest, had some thoughts about that. Then also talked about the games that I'm looking for in week 15. So here is this week's Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with myself and Joe Everett. All right, I'm joined now by Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible for the week 15 Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Joe, how's it going today, man?
Hanging in there. I'm starting to figure a few things in the NFL out, but just kind of sad it's already week 15. I wish it was week 5.
Yeah, right. Well, better late than never, I guess. And I'm 8-2 here over the last 2 weeks with my Bang the Book podcast super contest picks. So that's why I've forced Joe back onto the show here against his will. At least that's what I'm going to say. I don't know. Maybe he's happy to join me here. But I'm now 36 and 34 on the season with those back-to-back 4-1 weeks. My boss still holds site bragging rights by half of 36-33-1. He went 3-2 last week. So, you know, we'll see. That's pretty much all the drama that we've got going on here with regards to the Super Contest. However, the mini contest starts this week. For those that are unaware, the mini contest is a 3-week sprint. Best record over the last 3 weeks winds up with $15,000 cash. Obviously, you might have to split that if somebody matches the same record as you. I believe it's been at least 13-2 every year that we've been in it, and I think some years it's also been 14-1. I don't think anyone's ever gone 15-0, so maybe that's something for me to shoot for here this year. But this will bring back some of the people that have stopped making picks to the field, at least for 1 week. If they come back and go 2-3 or something like that, they'll ride on off into the sunset for the 2017 Super Contest. But that's of particular interest because we've had four straight weeks in the Super Contest here, north of 53%. Last week, 54.39%. Now 50.25% for the season. That's a very, very large sample size of games. I think it's over 160,000 picks or something like that. So, you know, good for the field to get over 50% here. Super Contest Gold also over 50%, 50.55% for the season, 56.36% in the gold. And Joe, I know you mentioned that you've kind of been coming around a little bit on the NFL here, doing a little bit better with your personal selections. Super Contest, four straight weeks over 53%. Seems like after some of the crazy things we had in the middle of the season, we're kind of back to status quo a little bit, and we're all starting to figure this thing out.
Yeah, some things are just making a little bit more sense, and it isn't just a matter of like, oh, well, it's favorites winning or it's all these dogs starting to cover the number. It's just not only good teams kind of rising above the fray there, it's just situations being really loud and clear, I think, this last week. Boy, that snow game, man, if you didn't jump on that under when you saw the pictures on Twitter, I mean, shame on you. That was one of my favorites all season long. I mean, there was just, I think there's a lot of angles that are, like I said, just kind of pointing themselves out at this juncture.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the equation for me, too, because I like to do a lot of situational handicapping. I mean, in college football, I feel like because I've got the power ratings, you know, it's something where I can get some edges with that. And then obviously in Major League Baseball, I use the analytics to my advantage. But when it comes to the NFL, NBA, NHL, it's a lot of situational handicapping for me. And a lot of those situations, you know, early on and then especially throughout the middle of the season, just weren't working out for me. Well, now they're starting to work out. They're starting to come to fruition, like you just said. And that's probably, you know, the driving force behind why I've been doing better here over the last few weeks worth of games. So, again, hopefully that can continue here because there are a lot of situational angles to focus on over these last 3 weeks of the season. One thing I've been updating here throughout the year, the consensus difference between the gold and the traditional with the specific sides there, those games 38, 32, and 4 to the gold side. Traditional consensus 95, 105, and 6, 47.5%. Top five consensus checking in here at 34 and 36. In the gold, the consensus could go over 500 this week. It's at 98, 99, and 6, 49.75%. Top five, 35, 34, and 1. But, Joe, I will say this, you know, 2,748 entrants this year, record high for the Super Contest. I presume it will surpass that next year, although maybe it could fall somewhere between 2016 and 2017 from an entry standpoint, especially with the Super Contest gold here this year, the $5,000 buy-in with the winner take all. But the cutoff for the money right now out of 2,748 entrants is above 62%. I think it's 62.3%. Which is one hell of an NFL year, and it is tough to cash in this thing. It's 62%.
Yeah, and I think that's the final cumulative numbers, I would guess, stacking up, because, like, I can't be alone. Like, I know you didn't come out of the gates blazing, six shooters firing. I think a lot of people started the year off a little slow, too, and that's got to be factored in that number.
All right, well, let's look here at this Week 15 card. It's a very spread out card. You've got some reasonable numbers. You've got some very, very big lines out there. I mean, the Saints are a 15.5-point favorite taking on Bryce Petty and the Jets. You've got the Vikings laying double digits. You've got the Jaguars laying double digits. You've got another game over a touchdown with the Eagles and the Giants. But a lot of other games pretty reasonable out there. Joe, overall impressions of the card here where – you know, we've got two marquee games in the 4 o'clock time slot, much like we did last week. But I don't know. It feels to me like this week doesn't stack up to what we saw last week on the schedule.
Yeah, last week was pretty stacked. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but I still think some nice little sneaky spots, you know, that Vikings-Bengals, I mean, you got to call that the Zimmer Bowl there. I love that little angle to play it there. And if, you know, Aaron Rodgers is back in the fray with the Panthers, I think that's a game that all of a sudden, you know, has so much more appeal there. And just those divisional rivalries. I mean, Chargers-Chiefs always is something I really love to get. I know we're going to break down that game too. But, you have to search a little bit more for it, for the value there and, the excitement and why to watch. But, it's tough. I think, like you said, last week was just that was about the best slate of games and just a perfect Sunday to say, nope, I'm taking it off, ordering a pizza. I've got plenty of adult sodas up there. I've been ready to go and rock last Sunday.
Now, one thing I will say here is one of the things I wrote down in my notes, and this is kind of relevant to the fact that we talk about this in bowl season, where late in the year, motivation means so much in college football. And it feels like this year in the NFL, more so than in years past, you've got some teams with some very, very questionable motivations out there, whether they're looking to improve their draft pick stock or they're just not that invested for a variety of reasons, lame duck head coach, quarterback changes, stuff like that. So you see that a lot here late in the year. But one of the challenging things about it, Joe, is that, you mentioned this already, a lot of division games on the schedule here this week. Over the next 2 weeks, the majority of the games are going to be division rivalries. So you have some teams that have kind of been dormant here over the last few weeks with a chance to play spoiler, and that sort of adds a new wrinkle into the equation of trying to figure out, which teams have the pride, which teams have the character to step up in that type of role and maybe influence the playoff picture here.
Yeah, they scheduled that change-up to kind of get these rivalries out there in order to decide the divisions and maybe have those playoffs going up to advantage. But you just can't avoid it sometimes. There's some teams that fall in the tank, and maybe not necessarily in the tank. It's just like you said, that where they are, what direction they have, where that arrow is pointed, it's anybody's guessing sometimes. So it's that's where you have a few of these this week that it's just I'll just be staying away because you don't know how to gauge certain teams. I mean, like where that Giants team is, that's anybody's guess reading some of the quotes and what we're hearing in the news.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I've got a couple of those games here on my card where we have division rivalry games where one team has questionable motivation. And, those are factors that I tried to consider. And one of them, is that game that's kind of bordering on more pick than lean. Another one later in the card is a lean because, I'm not sure if I want to trust those teams. I'm not sure if I want to, step in front of a better team to speculate as to whether or not their opponent is going to be invested and going to actually give a full effort. So, as we go through the card here and break down some of those games, our listeners will understand more with what I'm talking about. But we'll go ahead and get into the games that I do like as plays here. Three of those, and again, I said prior to this segment here, probably more like 3.5 that are plays that I like right now. But I'm looking at number 6 in the Super Contest rotation order here this week. That is the Kansas City Chiefs. They are a pick 'em at home against the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, I love what the Chargers are doing. I was on the Chargers last week against the Redskins. I thought it was a very, very good spot for them, catching a team going cross-country. What concerns me about the Chargers here is that they're beating schmucks. They're beating schlubs right now. 6-for-20 in the red zone the last 4 games. Again, those are games against the Bills, the Cowboys when Sean Lee was out, Ezekiel Elliott's obviously out. They had all the offensive line injuries. That was a Thanksgiving game. The Browns, who suck, and we all know that. Then the Redskins traveling cross-country without much of a care. So the Chargers, they've won 4 in a row. They've won 7 of 8. They're playing, as well as anybody in the NFL right now. But still, that 6-for-20 in the red zone would scare the hell out of me as a Chargers backer this week. Because if you're getting 3 instead of 7 against the Chiefs, it's harder to overcome that than it is when you're playing the Bills, Cowboys, Browns, and Redskins. Also, the Chargers, they haven't faced a real offense since before the bye. Maybe the Jacksonville Jaguars, but again, as we know about Jacksonville, with Blake Bortles, it's kind of hit or miss with what their passing game looks like. The biggest thing for me about this game, though, is that you've got the Chiefs at home, division game, massive game for first place, you know, in the AFC West. Home field advantage at Arrowhead is easily 3 points to me in this spot. The Chiefs were -2.5 in Los Angeles earlier on this season. So what this line is telling us this week is that the Chargers are -3 on a neutral, probably -5-ish at home because, you know, they don't have a full 3-point home field advantage, maybe -4.5 in L.A. I don't buy that at all. I say hell no to that. Give me Kansas City here at home in a game that they really, really need, and the fans are going to show up and support them. And also, too, the Chiefs, 10 yards per play against the Jets, moved it with ease last week against Oakland. I think that whatever they ran into in the middle of the season is behind them, and they're ready to go now and finish this thing out strong.
That's fair enough. I mean, I think the big thing there is the play calling switch up, and finally, you know, Andy Reid delegating. And that really, from what we've seen on the field, that I have to credit that to, like, kind of their turnaround and this, like you mentioned, the yards per play. And yeah, I think it's, you know, the Chargers are so hot right now. They're getting that public love, and it's hard not to love what Keenan Allen's doing, Phillip Rivers, Baldwin. But the last time these two teams played, I think Rivers threw 3 interceptions because he's my fantasy quarterback. Got that one indented in the memory there. So I don't think he's going to do that again. I mean, I'd look at like a high-scoring game here. But, yeah, home field advantage. I think the Chiefs have something figured out here. And if it really does come to a shootout, I think Kansas City might end up with a few more points here. I mean, I don't know if I'd be jumping on this game. But, yeah, forced to pick a side. Tough not to go with the Arrowhead support, and that's Travis Kelce, a little too much Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt finally turning things around, looking a little bit like the back we saw at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, with the Chiefs being 2.5-point favorites against the Chargers earlier on in the year, I understand that was a long time ago, and I understand that these are two different teams from that point. But if you look at that game and you sort of take the 2.5 for L.A. at home, and I'll give them 2.5 for the travel from, you know, Kansas City out to Los Angeles, then Kansas City would be a 5-point favorite on a neutral. And right now the Chargers are a 3-point favorite on a neutral per this line. I just don't see where anything has happened between these two teams to create an 8-point difference in this number. So I think there's some line value here on Kansas City. Also, I mentioned, you know, the teams that the Chargers have played, the Bills, Cowboys, Browns, and Redskins, none of those teams have a guy with the upside and the talent of a Marcus Peters, who's going to be on Keenan Allen in this game. Now, I know we've talked about the Chiefs and their lack of team speed and some of the issues that they have outside of Marcus Peters, but if Peters is on Keenan Allen and can hold him in check to whatever degree you can hold Keenan Allen in check to, I think this is kind of a game where the Chargers, you know, schematically from an X's and O's standpoint, this is easily the worst that they match up with any of their last, you know, 5 opponents. So I do worry a little bit about that offense here with Keenan Allen finally facing a guy that can hang with him.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, if Marcus Peters is playing to the best of his abilities, that's the one question mark there with the suspension and, you know, where his head's been at this season. This isn't the first time he's kind of popped off when he threw that flag against the ref, but before that, I forget which team it is now, I think it was the Raiders where they had the fight on the field. Marshawn Lynch has to escort him out. Peters, there is so much talent there, but boy, is he hot-headed, and I'm just, after the suspension, hopefully he's right. If he's upstairs, all checks. He could definitely shut down Keenan Allen. So I think that's where you do bring up a good point. I mean, matchup-wise, the strength versus strength, this is a team that can stop San Diego's best weapon.
Let me ask you this, because I like to try to look at all angles of the game that I possibly can. I mean, from what you know about Keenan Allen, is he a guy that can get under Marcus Peters' skin? I mean, is this a situation where, you know, he can play some of those head games, or is he just, you know, too soft-spoken of a guy, just kind of goes about his business and, you know, leaves it at that?
Well, I don't know a ton about Keenan Allen. I mean, especially when, you know, some of these underclassmen, West Coast, it's tough to get an interview with them or talk to them. But from what I've seen him in media appearances, he does strike me as a pretty cool customer. So I don't know how verbose he is on the field and, like, where he is with the game that's played outside the game, so to speak. But I don't know that really the separation is there. And boy, when you've got two physical guys that win on contested balls, that the favorite a lot of times is that corner that has the better length. So I think that's where the matchup, just like on the field, I'd give it to 100% all systems go Marcus Peters. But yeah, as far as that, you know, head games, like that's where he is vulnerable. You know, you can just kind of get him off his mark there for a second, and that's where some corners will struggle. But if it's just on the field, I mean, I'd have to give it to Peters as the downright better player. Even though Allen, yeah, I've watched those last four games. That's better footage than just about any receiver you've seen in a while.
One other consideration here, and this is something you have to look at in all of these games here in the month of December. Weather looks like it's going to be okay for this game. Temperatures in the 40s, but still, I mean, you know, Philip Rivers, a West Coast type of guy, you know, maybe a little bit of a chill in the air could slow him down a little bit, because as we know, the Chargers can't run the football all that effectively. They move as Philip Rivers moves them. So, you know, maybe playing in the Midwest here could cool Rivers off a little bit. So move on from that game here. We'll go to number 11 in the Super Contest rotation order. That's the Minnesota Vikings, who are a 10.5-point favorite against the Cincinnati Bengals, as you called it, the Mike Zimmer Bowl there in that one. To me, you know, I know that you don't get rich laying double digits in the NFL, but I'm laying it and playing it here with Minnesota because I think the Bengals have quit. And not only have they quit, but injuries have just decimated them on defense, particularly in the back seven. Adam Jones, Sean Williams, Vontaze Burfict, Dre Kirkpatrick, Darquez Dennard, Carlos Dunlap. Now, these are all guys that are either out for this game or listed on the injury report. Now, some of them may play, but they're not close to 100%. You know, it's late in the season. Some of these guys are very important to the long-term health of this franchise. So if they're not fully ready to go, probably not going to get green-lighted to play. So, you know, when you look at that, when you look at how ravaged by injuries and circumstantial things this Bengals team is, man, I just think they're in a bad, bad way here this week. I like the Vikings. I mean, I could very easily make a case for playing the Vikings, but I think the stronger case to make here is a fade of Cincinnati.
Exactly. This team's done, and I think this is the strongest look. This one, yeah, hey, reason why I'm on the show alert, I'm tailing a lot of these picks, folks, and I think the best look you had last week was just fading that Cincinnati team. And so what if it's the Bears that's just so banged up? And I don't think much has changed. And the big injuries, you know, you list all the names. Perfect, still in the concussion protocol. Mixon, still in the concussion protocol. And those two are the real changers of that offense. I mean, you take Mixon out, that's like taking the teeth off the wolf of this offense. I mean, yes, they've got A.J. Green, and I don't have to go on about my well-known hate of Andy Dalton. I just think the problem there is on defense, you take those perfect out, and really the underlying one, Geno Atkins, also struggling with a toe injury that he barely even played last week. He's not playing his full dose of snaps either. That's their real tone setter up front. So Carlos Dunlap and a bunch of misfits out there on defense. So yeah, I'm going against this team every chance I get. And if it's going to be with a coach I respect a ton, then that just makes the look even better. So yeah, the team Mike Zimmer knows. This is a strong roster against right now a team with no motivation, a lot of quit in them, and then just the mash unit that you're going to see on defense. I think Case Keenum kind of just has his way out there.
Yeah, and Carlos Dunlap also listed on the injury report here this week. By all accounts, it looks like he's probably going to play, but still, you know, another guy that's a very good player that's not playing at 100%, and you know, you start talking about those guys that aren't playing at 100%, and you're running into a team like Minnesota, you know, who's in a bounce back off a loss. You know, they've got the chance to, you know, really put themselves in a decent playoff position if the Eagles wind up stumbling here over the last 3 weeks without Carson Wentz. Minnesota's got stuff to play for. And for Cincinnati, you know, is it a motivating factor to play for Marvin Lewis's job? I don't know. I mean, Marvin Lewis has just kind of been hanging on to this gig. It feels like for a while now, you know, they haven't won a playoff game since what, 91 or whatever it is, since the early 90s. So this is a team that maybe does need a change. And I know Dunlap came out in support of Marvin Lewis after last week's loss, and other players will probably do so as well. But, you know, maybe it is just time for change there in Cincinnati. And, you know, I think that we'll get a fairly decent read on that here over their last three games. And here, you know, not only is it the injuries, not only is it a team I think has quit, I just think they're severely overmatched by Minnesota. Minnesota's so good defensively. And, you know, there's a couple of games that are on my card here this week where I just kind of look at them and I say, how many points do I really need the favorite to get me? You know, if Minnesota gets 17 or 20, can the Bengals get to double digits here? I don't know. I mean, without Mixon, with so much attention paid to A.J. Green, you know, with all the injuries they've had at the tight end position, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Andy Dalton's held the single digits here. So, you know, that's another consideration with these big favorites is, you know, how much do you actually need from them? And it's a bounce back spot for Case Keenum and company. Mike Remmers and Pat Elflein both practicing. They missed last week's game. This just has blowout written all over it to me. And I'm not afraid to lay it here with Minnesota. And I think you brought up a really good point there, you know, about the fact that when you are playing late in the season and you have these game-changing type guys, like a Perfect who can go out there and make you a play, like an Adam Jones who can make a special teams play, like a Joe Mixon who can make that play on offense to get you a long third down conversion or something. When you don't have those guys that create emotional lifts for you and you're playing out the string, that's a lot to overcome.
Yeah, they're just going to be playing left-handed on defense, a little bit on offense. And I love Elflein coming back. And yeah, if there's any motivation, maybe they're playing for Marvin Jones' job. But I think even the players can sense it. There's just that, smell in the air that this is the end of the tenure. I mean, even the greatest of coaches, it all has to come to an end. You know, Mike Shanahan at Denver, I hated to see it happen, but kind of needed to happen. Jeff Fisher in Tennessee all those years, it finally needed to, they had to make that change. And yeah, eventually Marvin Jones, unfortunately, because what's too bad about it is that he's got a great little coaching tree that, just as we mentioned, Mike Zimmer's a part of, say what you want, Hugh Jackson's a part of it, but Jay Gruden, like a lot of his assistants have gone on to do some things, and he is a great coach, a pretty neat guy to talk to in the media too. So it's just, you know, it's unfortunate to see, but I think this is the end of the rope. And yeah, this is just a team right now I'm so ready to get on the other side of, and you know, open up a few bills.
All right, one more game that I'm looking at here for that's most likely going to make my card. And again, I'll never play the other side of these games, but if any injury situations pop up or something like that, I reserve the right to change my mind. Now, that's number 20 in the Super Contest rotation order. That's the Arizona Cardinals, who are catching 4 on the road against the Washington Redskins. Now, obviously, I would have loved 4.5, which is what the consensus market number is as we're recording this here on Thursday evening, but I don't think it matters. The Redskins, to me, look like a finished team. You know, when Chris Thompson went down, we knew that was going to be a big deal for them, and it has been. Since he went down in the 3 full games that they've played, 323 yards and 17 first downs, 280 yards and 15 first downs, 201 yards and 9 first downs last week against the Chargers. They have 30 guys on their injury report over at Pro Football Reference. And a lot of those guys are done for the year already. You know, Jordan Reed, he's already on IR. They have no chance at the playoffs. And something we talked about on Thursday's edition of the show with Rolf Michaels is, you know, you look at Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins isn't going to mail this thing in. You know, he's been a leader for this team, you know, since he emerged over the last 3-4 years. But if you're playing behind a severely injured offensive line with very little skill position talent, and you've got a big payday coming down the line, you know, are you fully invested? Are you fully into this thing? Are you going to throw the football away the second someone, you know, starts to come near you? Are you going to abandon the pocket and get happy feet so you don't have to take those shots? None of those things help the Redskins. And I don't hold it against Kirk Cousins at all. I mean, dude, go out there and get your bread, man. Go get paid. But for the Redskins this year, with everything that's going on with them, the injuries and the Cousins fallout, and wondering what the future is going to look like for this team. There's just a lot of things going on behind the scenes and between the lines for the Redskins. I can't take them here in a game that really doesn't mean anything to them. You know, if they're playing Dallas or Philadelphia with a chance to keep the Eagles from the number one seed or keep Dallas out of the playoffs, yeah, maybe they're a little bit more invested. Playing the Arizona Cardinals here, who, you know, you can't play spoiler with, no motivation for the Redskins at all here. I think Arizona's easily the side.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just the line looked wrong when it opened. I mean, Kirk Cousins and this offense can't carry a whole team, especially like you mentioned. Just those injuries up front, it's finally caught up with them. The situation here is going to be Chandler Jones. Who's blocking him? I don't think they have the right answer. And unfortunately, you know, just Trent Williams, yes, he's toughed it out, and he deserves a ton of respect for playing through this injury. But, man, it's unfortunate because he's put some bad footage out there, and I love him as a player. So it's like, man, just take the last 3 weeks off. No one's going to take anything away from you. So, and that, the, you know, beyond that rabbit hole, I just think Blaine Gabbert, he's going to keep him ahead of the sticks. I'm looking at kind of a low-scoring game that Arizona should win outright. Yeah, I mean, I just think wrong team favored here, and I kind of like the general direction the Cardinals are going in. That defense is still strong, and Bruce Arians, he still dials it up. They've got a deep wide receiver core, and, man, it's just that seeing this Redskins team fall apart has been sad because they had some great elements, and I think the guy you brought up was one of their real sparks. That just losing him, I think everyone on the team kind of, that's the real big wind out of the sails type of thing. And Chris Thompson, just like a Joe Mixon for the Bengals, Alvin Kamara for the Saints, that same type of player that just get the ball into his hands about 5 or 6 times, one of those is going to be a 50-plus gainer. He'll find a way. And, yeah, not having that element in their offense has been so noticeable.
And I think another angle here in this game, and these are angles we can possibly explore a little bit going forward as well, is that I think the Arizona Cardinals players genuinely like playing for Bruce Arians. I mean, you know, you've always seen them come to his defense no matter what's going on. And this is a team that disappointed last year, you know, went just 7-8-1, and a lot of people backed them from a season win total standpoint, you know, backed them with some longer shots, Super Bowl futures. You know, there was kind of that vote of confidence in Arians, not just from the front office, but from the players as well. And here's another year where injuries have just really, really hurt them. But I think the guys are going to keep playing for Bruce Arians. You know, it's unlike the situation in Cincinnati where I think with their injury problems, you know, they're not really going out there and playing for Marvin Lewis. I think the Cardinals keep playing for Bruce Arians, so I'm not even worried about the travel because, you know, the reason I went against the Reds, one of the reasons I went against the Redskins last week is they had that cross-country trip to Los Angeles. And, you know, who wants to do that late in the year? You know, I mean, maybe the players wanted to go out to L.A. and take in the sights and Hollywood and all that. You know, if you had an Arizona team that wasn't invested in the coaching staff, wasn't invested in playing, you would never take them traveling cross-country to play an early kickoff in Washington. You know, I mean, the weather looks like it's going to be relatively okay for this game. But still, you know, they're a desert team and they're an indoor team. But I think there's enough respect for the people on this team and the coaching staff that I'm still willing to take the Cardinals here in this situation. And like you said, I mean, I think they even win the game outright. So I'll take the Cardinals +4 here. But, you know, again, a lot of considerations, not just for this game, but also for all the games as we go forward. Get into my leans list here with some of the games I'm looking at. I feel like I should probably take the Baltimore Ravens just because the Browns are going to find some way not to cover that game on Sunday, because it's kind of their MO now is that they're not just losing, they're also losing against the spread. And, you know, I mean, last week might have been worse than the Lions, you know, and the Jaguars games, right, Joe?
Oh, man. That sharp money on the Browns every week, it's just painful to watch. It's just how everything seems to melt down within their grasp. It's it can only mean that they're poised up for a complete turnaround. You know, just like the winless to close to undefeated, right? I mean, after all this bad, something good has to come out of it eventually.
There's going to be one of these years, and who knows? It could very well be next year, where the Browns all of a sudden take advantage of that built-in line value every single week, and they wind up going like 11-5 or 12-4 against the spread. It's going to happen one of these years. They'll probably go 4-12, but they'll go 12-4 against the spread or something like that. I mean, obviously, it's a pretty big offseason for them with the John Dorsey hiring and all that, but I'm not going to be laying a touchdown with the Ravens on the road. Their offense just isn't really good enough to do that. But I do have three leans here, and the one that's kind of my 3.5 play, because I'm just going to make shit up here on a Friday show, that would be number 7, the Philadelphia Eagles. They're a 7.5 point favorite against the New York Giants. And we talked about this on Monday's show, where the way that the playbook is constructed for the Eagles, with so many RPOs, those run-pass options, I think that helps Nick Foles. I think it takes some of the pressure off of Nick Foles. As long as he makes the right reads, he's going to have guys open because the skill position players for the Eagles are exceptional, and they get Zach Ertz back this week. But then he can just hand the ball off, and they've had a really good running game this year, well over 4 yards per carry. They've owned the line of scrimmage, even throughout their injuries. I think this playbook is tailored for a guy like Foles to not be a significant drop-off. I mean, he's clearly a drop-off from Carson Wentz, but I don't think it's going to be the woe is me, sky is falling type of thing that some people are expecting here, because I think Doug Peterson just has a good game plan that a lot of quarterbacks can figure out. And there's a reason that, when Doug Peterson handpicked Carson Wentz to be drafted, he was still okay with keeping Nick Foles around, because I think he feels like Nick Foles is a pretty good fit for this system. Now, again, this is one of those games where I look at this and I say, how many points do the Eagles really need to score to cover? I mean, the Giants have scored more than 20 points one time since week 7. So if I get the Eagles into the 20s, they should be in pretty decent shape here. Giants, I mean, lots of injuries for them. There's just not a whole lot going on. A house cleaning is coming. Eli Manning has one more home game on December 31st. So it's not like this is some big, rallying point for this team to win Eli's last home game or anything like that. Interim GM wants Davis Webb to play, so he probably will at some point. And this Eagles defense, which has been phenomenal throughout the season, a little bit of extra motivation for them, knowing that they don't have Carson Wentz out there. I know it's dangerous to lay more than a touchdown on the road, division rivalry with Nick Foles, but man, I have a hard time, finding reasons to take myself off this game.
And I'm not going to talk you out of it. The Doug Peterson fan club, I think, is about to get real loud after this game, because the Giants are just really, they're another banged up team. I'll say it now too. Landon Collins didn't practice, and if he doesn't play, he was in a walking boot after the game. That's another, we talked about, players, undercover players that I think really should be affecting lines. Landon Collins, one of the finest safeties in the league outside of that, a true leader, coach on the field, like, say what you want, like, a lot of these intangible things apply to Collins. He is just a great player. So, yeah, if you've got information that he doesn't play, I'm right there with you, pounding on some Eagles, because this is still a very good team top to bottom. And right now it's another Weston Rickberg, Justin Pugh, DJ Fluker, all these guys are out. If they get the Bobby Hart experiment back out at tackle, trying to block Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Derek Barnett, that's just going to be pretty sad to watch for Giants fans. So, yeah, I'm not going to talk you out of this one at all. And I think fly, Eagles, fly here.
Well, and the safeties are so important in those RPOs because, are they going to come down and help out with the run? Are they going to be back in coverage? Are they covering the slot guy? Are they helping over the top? Without a guy like Collins who can read the play and then make the play. I mean, a lot of guys can read the play. They just don't have the skill set to make the play. If he's not out there, with all this skill position talent that Philadelphia has, I mean, this thing is set up for Nick Foles to have success. And maybe he doesn't right out of the chute, and maybe I look bad, playing this game. But I think that, in terms of looking at everything here, the X's and O's, the situations, all that type of stuff, I think all of it favors the Eagles so much. And again, you talk about that first game after losing a guy like Carson Wentz. And look, they did what they needed to do last week after losing Carson Wentz, knowing probably that, the on-field ACL test didn't come back with positive results. They still sacked up and won that game. And it was a tough spot. They had been out on the West Coast for, effectively 9 days with the trip to Seattle and then that game, down in Rams country. So, I mean, the Eagles are just, they're a tight-knit group. I think they rally around each other. I think the defense rallies, the skill position guys help out. I just think this is one of those spots where, you know, it's Eagles or nothing, and I think I'm definitely going to be on the Eagles side here in this one. Another NFC East team that I'm looking at, number 29 in the Super Contest rotation order, the Dallas Cowboys. They're a three-point favorite. I'm a little bit worried about how popular of this is going to be, and also the fact that it's moved from pick 'em to minus three and in fairly short order here throughout the week. But, man, Joe, the Raiders, just they're not very good right now.
How did they not show up last week? And, yeah, I'm griping because I had the over Raiders, Chiefs. If they just, you know, put a few points up on the board, Kansas City did their part, but that's for survival. That's for your lifeblood, and they just didn't even come to the party. So, this is not just a bad team. I think this is a completely lifeless team. Arguably their best player on offense, Amari Cooper, is probably not going to play again. I mean, he hasn't been practicing. Derek Carr's playing hurt. It's so noticeable. He's not even walking right to the sidelines. So, yeah, this and the worst part is this wasteland on defense. I mean, Khalil Mack is, you know, he's a great pass rusher, but he is one man. The rest of this, they've got no coverage players. Navarro Bowman acquiring him, I guess that's worked out to some degree. But, yeah, this back half can be had. They can be run against, passed against, you name it. I think the Cowboys have figured out a little bit of something. And as we've talked about, their elixir, their team deodorant, whatever term you want to give them, Sean Lee's back. And if Sean Lee's back, I'm more than happy to have a Cowboys side. And at this point, there's no way you could even consider siding up with the Raiders. Just after last week was enough for me. I mean, that should be all you need to see. If they don't show up for that divisional game, then what are they going to show up for? And it's certainly not going to be this week against the Cowboys. So, yeah, I can't blame you for wanting to Dallas. And, yeah, maybe it will be a popular pick, but so what? There's nothing wrong with being in the right line.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sean Lee, I mean, he's huge. We've talked about that a lot. And I faded the Cowboys a couple of times when Sean Lee was out of the equation. And you know, they found something here in Rod Smith, too. And, you know, Rod Smith has played himself into a position where when Ezekiel Elliott comes back, Rod Smith's your backup running back. And Alfred Morris may be, you know, looking for a job or maybe up in the press box. So, you know, they've found that, too, as the offensive line has gotten healthier. Dak Prescott looks a little bit more comfortable now that the offensive line has gotten healthier. The Cowboys are, you know, a team going in the right direction, and the Raiders just absolutely are not. One other lean that I'm looking at, and you know, as we're talking through the Cowboys and the Eagles here, I feel like this is kind of a distant sixth lean or sixth play, I guess I should say. I could make a case for Tampa Bay plus 6.5 on Monday night. They are very bad. We talked about this situation with Dirk Cotter and Jameis Winston, and now, you know, reports kind of circling out there. There's some friction between those two. But the thing here for me is, can Atlanta go on the road, win this Monday night football game comfortably, playing the Saints and the Panthers over the next two games? That's the thing that I'm worried about. You know, can they remain focused? Can they take care of business? The problem is they're playing Tampa Bay, who I think, you know, has to an extent mailed this thing in for the rest of the year. Mike Evans just doesn't look all that engaged. The defense had some injuries early on in the year, and now Gerald McCoy is hurt. It's a hard play to make to take the Buccaneers. I think situationally, they are the side, and if they win this game outright or lose by a field goal, it doesn't surprise me. But I don't know if I'm willing to go that route in the Super Contest.
Yeah, it's tough. I just the one part of that side, I don't trust the Falcons, and I've probably said that too many times on the show, but I don't care. I'll say it 10 more times. Steve Sarkisian, where he's at as a coach, is he making those adjustments? Specifically in the second half, if you look at some of their results, they are – that first half teams, like, yeah, they look great. The first two quarters, that was some good ball, and then it's like a never fail. They come out of that locker room just, I don't know what they did. They just had some holiday shots or something, but that's going to be a Monday night game where I'm sure we'll get into it on Monday, but I'm so leery of the Falcons unless it's a first half, what do you call it, derivative kind of bet. But yeah, I can't trust the Falcons. If you want the Bucks, this could be that, what do you call the look ahead? That might be a decent play here, but it's, I don't know. That's a tough game to pick just because of the fact of, you know, which Atlanta team shows up.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'll say this. I mean, everybody and their brother is going to have an Atlanta teaser on Monday night, or at least Atlanta in some kind of teaser, you know, paired with one of the Sunday games. So I'm sure that we'll be able to talk about that on Monday for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football preview segment. But Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible, at Joe W. Everett on Twitter, at NFL Draft Bible on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining me again here this week, man, and I'll talk to you again on Monday.
All right. Looking forward to it, Adam.
Great stuff there on this week's Super Contest segment with myself and Joe Everett. You can follow his work at Joe W. Everett on Twitter or over at NFL Draft Bible, which is on Twitter at NFL Draft Bible. One more segment left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Sharp money all over the place in the market once again, as you know from listening to these segments throughout the season. So we talk college football bowl games and also NFL here on the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent from DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the odds report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
I'm hanging by a thread here, Adam, but I'm here nonetheless.
Yeah, I hear you. We had a little bit of a back and forth before we started recording here, and you're kind of coughing away down there. So we'll do everything we can to get you through this segment, and hey, hopefully you're feeling better for next week. But one of the things that you and I were talking about here a little bit, and this is kind of disappointing for our listeners out there, we don't have a whole lot of sharp action in the college football market to discuss. And we were sort of speculating on it a little bit here before we started recording that, you know, with these weeknight games and with these very busy weekends in December, just hard for even sharp guys to tie up, you know, portions of their bankroll.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much action going on these days. hockey, college basketball, NBA basketball, obviously just so much going on. We talked about plays last week in terms of sharp action that we saw. And, you know, generally, you know, when they play games like that, it's because there's value that they absolutely have to jump on at the time. Usually with sharp guys, that, you know, the issue isn't so much bankroll in terms of, you know, whether or not the limits are high enough and how much they get down on a game, and whether a number hits the spot. I mean, we talked about how Alabama was a sharp play. Georgia was a sharp play as well. And both those games, I mean, Alabama's gone from pick to -3 dog 15 now. So when they see value like that, that they feel they have to jump on, they certainly do that. LSU was a play like that as well, -2. And now it's like -3, -115. So, you know, getting stuff, especially, you know, when it swirls around key numbers, Missouri was a case like that as well that we talked about. They were like -1.5 versus Texas. And that number is still at 3 as well. So when there's, you know, value out there that they have to absolutely grab, they certainly do that. But in terms of tying up your bankroll, there's just so much going on. It's kind of tough to do that. And, you know, you really want to tie up money on, you know, Georgia State, Western Kentucky when you got all these games coming up. You know, during the week, it's tough to do sometimes.
Yeah, it really is, and that's why we kind of talk about, you know, when you expect flurries of action for the bowl season, and you're going to get, you know, that initial action from the guys that pick off numbers when these numbers open, and after that they do just kind of sit there for a while. I mean, you look at, you know, Akron and Florida Atlantic, we've seen some sharp money in the total, which we'll get to in a second. But we saw that spread get hit very, very quickly right out of the gates, and it really hasn't moved over the last 10, 12 days or something. You know, we may start to see some more action on Monday for the side after the NFL weekend. Same thing Wednesday's game, you know, where, as we talked about with Louisiana Tech and SMU before we got on the air, it opened 5 and 70, still sitting there. Temple and Florida International opened 7 and the total that it's been at the whole time. So, you know, you get that initial wave if there's value to be had, like you said, around those key numbers, and then you just kind of play the waiting game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at the board there, I mean, even like Wyoming was a pick. Now they're -1. You know, no real move there. Total went from 44.5 to 45.5, or 45.5 to 44.5. No, you know, just nothing there. Ohio, UAB, same thing. I mean, a total moving a point is nothing, and the spread was 7.5. It's still 7.5. So yeah, I mean, games that the sharps don't get involved in, your public guys aren't going to get heavily involved in. Obviously, you know, so early in the week.
And another thing, too, and we, I think we kind of speculated on this a little bit on last week's segment, or maybe it was the one before, but the significance and the amount of game day moves that we've seen this year in college football and in the NFL, it almost feels like, you know, we may not even see that much a day or two before the game. We may just see, you know, a ton of action come in, both sharp and public, on game day for a lot of these bowl games because, you know, I mean, you never know with these bowls. Is somebody going to sit out? Is somebody going to get suspended? You know, what's going on with the weather? You just never know. I think we may see, you know, just significant game day action, and that may be about it.
Yeah, the weather obviously is a big factor this time of year. You know, we talked about last week, I guess it was the Army-Navy game. We saw how that one turned out. That total dropped obviously dramatically throughout the week. I mean, it closed, I can't remember how low it closed, but damn, it was real low. Closed, I think it was around like 43.5, and I believe it was open like around 50.5 or 51. So weather definitely plays a factor, especially if you're playing totals. You really don't want to gamble on stuff like that.
All right, well, let's look at some of these games here that have some sharp involvement. All three of them totals. You know, again, I mean, we just don't have a whole lot of side movement yet to talk about because, like I said, I think a lot of these moves are going to come in on game day here during the bowl season because a lot of the line value has already been extracted from those people that hit the games early on. But game 205-206 starts us off here, the Las Vegas Bowl. Oregon takes on Boise State. Sharp action on the total in this one.
Yeah, we got sharp action on this one, Adam, and that did come on the overs as well. So never a good spot for us, as your listeners, you know, probably well know by now. Over 59 is where they came on this one, and you know it's typical, especially with Oregon involved, getting money on the over from the public. So I do have a wager count almost 3-1 favoring the over. And, I mean, you look at Boise State too. I mean, they are the dog in this one, but in the games that they've won this year, they've certainly put up big numbers. So they're capable of putting up big numbers. And Oregon kind of the first half of the season they were one of those teams that the Sharps were identifying as an underplay. Perhaps the line were just kind of, overvalued and towards the over. And then the second half of the season, they started going over on those games and started winning with those two. So Oregon and Boise over is where I got sharp money on this one. Excuse me. Like I said, the wager count's almost 3-1 favoring the over as well. So I got public money going the same way as the Sharps. Right now we're up to 61.5 from that initial sharp hit at 59.
Another game on Saturday that's drawn a little bit of sharp involvement. The total on the game, 207-208. Marshall takes on Colorado State in the New Mexico Bowl. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's another one that we had talked about as well as the over. Just same situation. It just got over money on that one as well. Wager count with the public, of course, going over as well. 55 is where that sharp action came. We're sitting at 58 right now. It's interesting to note, too, with these games on the 16th, if you take a look at these totals, Troy opened 60.5. It's 62.5 right now. The Georgia State Western Kentucky game opened 50.5. It's 53.5 right now. We touched on Oregon, talking about Marshall right now. Those totals both have moved up. And Middle Tennessee State and Arkansas State, that total opened 57.5. It's up to 64 right now. So we got five different games here on Saturday the 16th, and every one of them have moved up. Now, you can't always just look at the board and say, okay, every game moved up, so that must be sharp money on every game. It's only sharp money on these two of them. The rest is just public money, where I got more dramatic counts, like almost 6-1 in some of these games, in terms of how much the public is betting the over on these.
Well, of course, you've got quarterback situations for Oregon and Middle Tennessee State where they were without their starters for half or more of the season, and that kind of skews some of the year-to-date numbers. We talked about that on Thursday's show with Oregon and the fact they didn't have Justin Herbert. Then Middle Tennessee State not having Brent Stockstill. Offensively, they were kind of a mess there without him. So, one thing I do want to ask you about before we transition away from Saturday and hit on the one other game with some sharp action on the total is that you've talked about some of those moves. The Troy North Texas move a couple points, Georgia State Western Kentucky, moved up fairly substantially. Same thing with Oregon and Boise State. With the nature of bowl games, with the expected handle, and the expected public investment, if you start getting those early sharp hits on the over, are you apt to move this number more aggressively, just, knowing what's coming down the line?
Yeah, you do definitely take into account your wager counts a lot more with these games because you're going to get so much more action kind of concentrated. And the way they usually schedule these quite well for us in terms of you got an early wave of games, an afternoon wave, and then a late wave of games. So you're probably going to get people turning over their bankroll two or three times throughout the day. So our handle is quite high, yeah. And you definitely have to react because you kind of make the assumption. And again, it's a bit of profiling on your customer base. Your public customers and how many there are and how deep their pockets are and how many guys. Fire really big on totals and how many of them fire kind of smaller, which kind of scales your wager count out there. So, I mean, we definitely have guys who, might wager a little bit smaller, but, more of them in terms of the over guys. And then we've got our fewer sharps who are out there who fire the big, big, big numbers. So you have to be a little bit more aggressive when the sharps get involved with these same numbers, of course.
How much do you worry about getting middled during bowl season? Like that Middle Tennessee State, Arkansas State game where it opened 57, it's 63 now. I presume at some point, there's going to be some sharp involvement that says, well, this total's too high now. We're going to come back on it. Is that something that you worry about at all?
you just kind of have to look at, you know, where you've come from and how much you took at those certain numbers. And it could be that, you know, you took smaller bets at a certain number. It could be that you're, you know, maybe your first real significant bet wasn't until 60. So you're really kind of working from, you know, say maybe 60 to 63, which maybe isn't as bad a spot. So it all depends on how much, you know, action in terms of dollar volume you took at the lower numbers. Now, if you took, you know, a max bet on over 58 on Middle Tennessee State, and now you're sitting at 64, you almost get nervous about a big, big bet coming back the other way.
All right, one more game that's got some totals involvement here. That's the Boca Raton Bowl. Akron takes on Florida Atlantic, game 211, 212. The Owls are a massive favorite. And again, as I mentioned, this is a number that moved very, very quickly at open. The spread hasn't really moved since then, but the total has.
You know, again, we're unlucky for us, I guess, in terms of these games so far that we're talking about with all the overaction and sharp action on the over this one as well. Over 61 is where we got sharp action on this one. We're all up to 64.5 now. I know there are some 63.5s and 64s out there, but because of the sharp action we got, we are being aggressive in terms of using the 64.5. And again, the public is all over, you know, Florida Atlantic games over, which, you know, which is no surprise at all. My wager count on the side is about 3-1 favoring the favorite, Florida Atlantic minus 22.5, but my wager count on the total is about 5-1 favoring the over. So I got the public all over Florida Atlantic. And I mean, you look at how many points they've scored the last few games. I took a quick glance. It was like 41, 31, 52, 48, 30, 42, 69, 53. I mean, they just put up a ton of points. So it's kind of, you know, you don't want to go overboard in terms of how high of a number you put up, but obviously this wasn't high enough. I mean, if I could start all over, I'd probably throw up the number we have right now.
Early on in the bowl season, you have a lot of teams that are not public in nature. North Texas and Troy, Georgia State, Western Kentucky, you know, Marshall, Colorado State may be a little bit, you know, public because a lot of people expected them to show up in the Mountain West title game. Middle Tennessee State, Arkansas State, Akron, you know, Louisiana Tech, SMU, Temple, FIU. How much respect do you have for public money in these early bowl games where they're probably betting on teams that they just don't really know all that well?
Right. I mean, obviously, you have to weigh a whole lot more to the sharp action. But still, you know, we've talked about before that, you know, we throw up the advantage that bettors always have is I have to put up a number on every single game. They don't have to bet every single game. So the sharp guys can really, you know, sit back and pick their spots. And with the public, you just never know, you know, how heavily you're going to get involved on one side. Now, generally speaking, you know, look at some of the favorites out there, the more kind of public teams. I mean, like Florida Atlantic, for example. You just kind of get the feel of a game like that, a spread that high and a total that high. They're going to be all over that. You can kind of anticipate some of those moves. But when it comes to the sharps, I mean, you just never know. I mean, we've talked about before. I mean, if you and I had a thumb war and some sharp guy had an advantage on it, they would, you know, they put some money down on it if they had it, you know, if they feel they had an edge. So they'll basically bet anything and everything they can find value in it. So it doesn't really matter in terms of the, you know, the names of the teams. You get to a point with them as well. It's kind of value. It's like trading futures and stuff like that. It's team A versus team B. If they think the line should be 3.5 and we're using the pick, they're going to bet, you know, they're going to lay that pick for sure. If they think the number should be, you know, pick and you're laying 3.5, they'll take the 3.5.
I just want our listeners to know, if I ever come down there to Costa Rica, Brent, I am the Kurt Angle of thumb wrestling. So they better put their money on me, and I better be favored in that battle that we're going to have one day. All right, let's move over to the NFL side of things here. We'll start with game 313, 314, a little bit of an AFC East matchup here up in Western New York. Miami takes on Buffalo. Sharp action on the side here for this one.
Yeah, and it's interesting to note, just talking about the Dolphins, because of the Monday night game that just passed, they were, you know, a 10.5 point home dog to New England. And it was just like, you know, I talk a lot about how I really don't kind of look too deep into the plays and stuff like that in terms of the sharp guys who played it, why they played it, et cetera, et cetera. I just kind of take it for what it is. Sharp guys like that side. And they were all over Miami. It was quite interesting. I was almost surprised. You know, it wasn't like a bad schedule spot for New England, Miami, or anything like that. I mean, they had played a couple weeks prior, which was kind of odd. Like, they each had one game in between, playing almost like back to back. They played each other twice in 3 weeks, which is kind of an odd schedule spot. But sharp money was all over Miami. I had them on the spread. I had them betting the first half. I had them betting the first quarter. Miami was really crazy, and obviously the public was all over the other way. This obviously is not going to set up as the same kind of game, but I do have sharps on Miami once again. And again, it's interesting because, you know, weather is probably going to be a factor here. It's obviously, you know, definitely going to be cold in Buffalo. Whether we have snow like last week is probably not going to happen. That was, you know, just an absolute blizzard they played last week. But I've got a wager count favoring Buffalo, and I've got sharp action on Miami, so that's a bit of a good spot for us, is where that sharp action came in. I'm actually using 3 flat right now with Buffalo.
So where do you think this number goes? I mean, do you think that we – because I'm kind of curious to see where the public comes in. I mean, Tyrod Taylor expected to be back for Buffalo. Nathan Peterman's got a concussion. Miami, with that win over New England, and we all know about recency bias out there and perception bias in the market, do we fall down to three then?
Well, we're three right now, and I just think we're going to stay there as well. I don't think this number is going to go off three now that we've hit that. I see the public is betting Buffalo a little bit more right now, so I think that's probably going to continue. And if I can, you know, get close to balancing out my action with that, it'll be a good spot for us, these two. It's interesting, too, like with Miami and Buffalo being in the same division, and here we are, you know, so late in the season, and they haven't played each other yet, so we don't even have anything to go off of. These two teams obviously play each other this weekend in Buffalo. They each have another game, and then the last game of the season, the 31st, they meet again in Miami. So it's an interesting spot for them. This is kind of like a big game because Buffalo's sitting at 7-6 and Miami, you know, 6-7. They're both kind of in the playoff picture still. But it's kind of weird. Like I said, Miami a couple of weeks ago played New England, then played them last week, and now they play Buffalo, and 2 weeks later they play Buffalo again. Kind of an odd spot. But from what I've seen so far, I do have more, you know, more public money on Buffalo and sharp action on Miami. So I think it's just going to stick where it is. I'm kind of interested with the weather, too. I mean, this is one of those things we're going to have to follow, because that game last week with the total, I think we were around like 39.5 and ended up closing 36.5 with the bad weather. Our second half total, same thing. We put up, I believe it was 14.5 under minus 120, and we ended up being like 14 under minus 125. So people saw that bad weather, just bet the heck out of the under.
My apologies for that. I was looking in the wrong column there on my odd screen for that game. So I do apologize to our listeners for that gaffe. All right, how about Arizona and Washington? Game 319, 320 here. Seems like the side kind of sitting in a decent spot right now, but you have seen some sharp involvement on the total.
Yeah, the side we're sitting at, I mean, pretty much 4.5 from 4 market wide. The total has dropped down kind of significantly, 2.5 points on this total for us. I'm using 41.5 because of the sharp action I took on the under. Under action came in on this one at 44. So, again, it's kind of a weird spot. I mean, you look at, you know, the public and you kind of paint the picture where, okay, public guys bet the over. Well, this is one of those games where I got public action on the under, kind of unfortunate roll of the dice for us. But again, I mean, this, you know, the Arizona offense probably doesn't inspire a whole lot, and both these teams are kind of, you know, not really, you know, in a playoff picture with Washington 5-8. I mean, Arizona's, you know, sitting at 6-7, but Washington's lost a couple of games and sitting at 5-8. But I do have a count favoring the under and sharp action under the 44. We're at, like I said, we're at 41.5 right now.
Is there a chance that this number gets down to 3.5, or do you think that 4 is a pretty good spot for you to be dug in right now?
I think it's a good spot right now. It has moved down from, you know, it was around 5 at 5 and 5.5, so it has gradually worked its way down. But I mean, you give, you know, Washington a bit of the edge with the home field advantage, of course. But you know, there's not a whole lot to like between either of these two teams. And other than the sharp action, I think in terms of my, you know, my wager count, it's going to be one of the fewer bet games of the week. You know, I've talked previously that, you know, generally, you know, over the course of a Sunday, you've got probably, you know, just using an example, you've got, you know, 4 or 5 games where you've got, you know, just a ton of action on. You've got 4 or 5 games where you've got a lot of action on. And there's around 4 games where you just get kind of dead action on. And I see this game as setting up as one of those. Miami-Buffalo is probably going to set up that way, but that's going to be more of a factor because of weather. Houston-Jacksonville, I think, you know, just kind of get the early impression that's going to be a low count. But there are some real good games on the board this week.
Yeah, this next game that we're going to talk about will not be one with a low count. This should be one of the higher bet games of the weekend. The Rams take on Seattle, game 323, 324. These two teams played earlier in the year, as we've mentioned throughout the week here. Rams -5 in turnover margin, lost 16-10. You know, outgained Seattle, but just couldn't overcome all those turnovers. Pretty significant move here in this game on the side.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the – I mean, talking right now, as I mentioned, you know, we have like 4 or 5 games where we get a ton of action. Now, obviously, the Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night games always get a ton of action because of the marquee games. But looking at like Saturday, the Chargers in Kansas City, that's a massive game for us right now. Green Bay, Carolina is huge in terms of volume. New England and Pittsburgh, I mean, I don't even have to mention that in terms of the amount of volume we're going to write on that. And then this game is right up there with the Rams and Seattle. Obviously, you know, you touched on this is a real big game with the Rams at 9-4, Seattle 8-5, and Seattle already beat them earlier in the season. This game does set up as a, you know, good one for us in terms of the split in that I do have sharp money on Seattle. They bet Seattle at a pick. That line is -2.5 right now, so Seattle's a 2.5-point home favorite. But I have a wager count, you know, almost 2-1, slightly under 2-1 favoring the Rams. So I've got public money on the Rams. I got sharp money on Seattle, and I actually have, you know, I have more bets on the Rams, so that's a good spot for us, and I have more money on Seattle.
Yeah, that is pretty much the setup that you're looking for. And I know that there's no Sharp involvement on this game, but since it's right there, game 325, 326, I've got to ask you, because this is the marquee game of the weekend. New England takes on Pittsburgh. Patriots right now, 3-point favorite in this one. And you know, obviously New England in a bounce back roll off of a rare loss, and a loss that, you know, probably was pretty decent for the books. Not as good as a Patriots loss usually is with that avalanche of sharp money on Miami. But what's going on with 325, 326 here? Like I said, I know there's no sharp involvement, but what do the counts look like?
Yeah, you're right about, you know, talking about the Miami-New England game. That typically that Miami win would have been just, you know, massive for us. But I, because of all the sharp money, it didn't work out that way. But still, we did quite well. You just kind of dug your heels in at the number and let the public bet Miami or bet New England as much as they did. This game, yeah, it's massive in terms of my count right now. I do have a lot more money on New England and a wager count of almost 3-1 favoring New England. So a lot of New England money still from the public here. Again, as you touched on, we don't have any sharp action involved as of yet. Our total has slightly crept up just because I have a wager count about 2-1 favoring the over. So we've gone from like 53 to 53.5 or 54 out there. So that number is kind of high in terms of the total at 54. But, you know, maybe surprisingly, maybe not. You talk about a Pittsburgh team that's won 8 games in a row at home, a 3-point dog. That's just kind of a weird spot for them to be an underdog as they are, and nothing but public money the other way. Like I said, a wager count almost 3-1 favoring New England.
So what do you think? Is 3 a good number here, or do we see a 2.5 or a 3.5 pop?
I think the sharps, you know, there seems to be a point where they have to get involved in this one. And I said right now we're New England minus 3, dog 15. So they are paying that extra 5 cents. And again, the sharps do know the value of that 5 cents. So I think that if this one got to 3 flat or 3 minus 115, I think you'd see sharps, you know, swoop in on Pittsburgh at that point.
All right, one other game to touch on here. This is the Sunday Night Football game. And, you know, this is another one that's going to draw a pretty high betting handle because you've got an extremely public Dallas Cowboys team in the primetime spotlight for game 329, 330. What's the story on the sharp action in this one, Brent?
Yeah, unfortunately, we always get, Cowboys being America's team. I don't know if they still are or not. It seems like New England is the way people bet. But I've got a wager count, almost 3-1 favoring Dallas, and I have sharp action that way as well. Sharp action came in here, minus 1.5 on Dallas. Now they're up to 3 on the road at Oakland. So, yeah, it's never a terrible spot for us long-term when you're sitting there having to need the home dog on, like I said, the Sunday night, Monday night, or Thursday game. So home dog is kind of one of those spots where you don't kind of mind having to sit back and roll with them. But, you know, it would feel a little bit better if Oakland was in a better position. I know they're, 6-7 right now. They kind of, you know, might convince themselves they're in the thick of things. Dallas won a couple games in a row at 7-6. So I just don't see, a whole lot of public support jumping back on Oakland right now. I am using 3 flats. We've gone all the way from 3 to 3 flat. There are, slight variances out in the market in terms of Dallas being -3, -05, or even as high as -3, -120. So it seems to be trending upwards still with Dallas. And that's probably the fact that you've got sharp money on Dallas and the public the same way.
So I know it's not all that significant of a move to go from pick 'em up to 3. I mean, 1 and 2, not all that key when it comes to the NFL. Were you surprised to see this number roll out, pick 'em?
No, honestly, I kind of thought it was the right number. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot separating these two teams. On a neutral field, Dallas being a 3-point favorite, more than a 3-point favorite. I don't really see that. I don't know how you can make Dallas a whole lot more of a favorite in this game. But again, I mean, Oakland, I don't know. You just never know what you're going to get from them, it seems. They've been kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde team for us. They lost last week at Kansas City. Before that, they ran off a couple wins in a row. Now, I mean, sure, they didn't beat the world beaters when they beat the Giants and Denver, so they haven't been beating the top-end teams. But they're, 6-7, so it's not like they're an awful team at all. But, yeah, you just kind of never know what you're going to get. I mean, Oakland went through that bad spell where they lost like 4 games in a row or something like that, and that kind of knocked themselves out of it. But, I mean, Dallas as well. I mean, Dallas hasn't exactly, lit the world on fire. You kind of knew that you're going to get public money with them for sure. But you kind of – it's one of those spots where, again, like I said, Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, when you're sitting there having to deal with the home dog as your position, it's never a bad spot for us really.
Well, Brent, I appreciate you making it through the show here today. I hope you feel better, buddy, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great weekend, Adam.
Always good to chat with Brent there and get that view from the other side of the counter. And you know what? It's always fascinating to me to see not just the games that the sharp guys are on, but the projections for the line moves, the forecasts of where Brent and other risk managers across the industry think these numbers are going to go. I absolutely love being able to get that different perspective here on the show. It's been a fun segment for us. We'll carry that through here through the Super Bowl. We'll talk about some props that have exposure and things like that for the Super Bowl that's upcoming here in February. But you know, that segment will be a little bit shorter, obviously, once we finish up with the college football bowl season, but we'll still have NFL news and notes from the playoffs and then also heading on into the Super Bowl. Great week here on Bang the Book Radio. If you missed anything, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you can find it over at bangthebook.com or on either one of our iTunes channels, the one with individual segments or with the full shows. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.